Welcome to this amazing, mind-blowing podcast.
You're tuned in to the R1 News, your stop for news and current affairs on the airwaves. 11 to 12 weekdays here on Radio 1 91 FM, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
Tēnā koutou I tēnei ata, kei te whakarongo mai koe ki Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Ko Zach toku ingoa.
Ko Emilia toku ingoa.
And you're listening to the R1 News Show for Rāmere, Te Te Kaumārua o Here Turikoka on Radio 1, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
Coming up on the program, I tēnei rā, we have economist Trent Smith from the University of Otago's Department of Economics to discuss house prices for business as usual. Then we have Dr. Daniel Kingston coming in to talk about the El Niño Southern Oscillation Index and how this is impacting New Zealand's climate.
After that, we'll be speaking to energy poverty specialist Dr. Kimberly O'Sullivan from Te Whare Wānanga o Otago ki Poneke about hidden power disconnections for those on prepaid power plans.
Lastly and not leastly, we'll have Otago Farmers Market Manager Michelle Driscoll to talk about what's happening at the market tomorrow for our weekly segment, Off to Market. But before all of that, we have news, headlines and weather from Eileen.
But first, here's Lost Trace with Class. You're listening to the R1 News on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. It is currently 11:03. Puritia kia raka.
You're listening to R1 News here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. It is 11:05 a.m. We just heard Lost Trace with Klaus, and now it's time for news headlines and weather.
The R1 News Headlines.
Tēnā koutou, ko Eileen tēnei. The BA2 variant of Omicron has been overtaken by BA4 and 5 in Dunedin. In early July, the city began to see BA4 and 5 becoming the dominant strain of COVID-19. The variants have since accounted for 90% of cases in Ōtipoti. Yesterday, 345 new cases of COVID-19 were reported in Otago and Southland, with one death in the region. Nazi symbols have been banned in New South Wales, Australia. The Crimes Amendment Bill, which was passed with unanimous support on Thursday, will see those who intentionally display Nazi symbols, such as swastikas, hit with an $11,000 fine and a year in prison. An inquiry earlier this year recommended the ban on Nazi symbols being displayed publicly in a bid to tackle anti-Semitism. The state of Victoria passed similar legislation in June. Close to 40 Palestinian children have been killed in the occupied Palestinian territories this year, a statistic the UN Human Rights Chief has called unconscionable. In a statement released on Thursday, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, said in many of these incidents, Israeli forces appeared to have violated international human rights law in their use of lethal force. The past week has seen 19 Palestinian children killed in the occupied territory, 17 in attacks by Israel on Gaza and 2 in attacks on the West Bank. Bachelet said international humanitarian law made it clear that such attacks must stop due to the danger to civilians. A truce between Israel and the Islamic Jihad movement in Palestine is in place after mediation efforts led by Egypt. And those were the headlines on the R1 News. Now, the weather.
The R1 News weather.
It's sunny in Otipoti I tēnei rā, with morning frost clearing to a high of te Komātahi, 11, and a low of Ono, 6. Expect morning cloud and showers to clear to a fine afternoon on Rāhore, Saturday, with a high of te Komātahi, 11 again, and a low of Toru, 3.
That was the R1 News headlines. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram and tune in to R1 News at 11 a.m. on weekdays.
Kia ora Eileen for those news and weather updates. It's currently 11:08 here on the Ramere R1 News programme. Up next we have Juno Is with Ethno Groover, but after that we've got Trent Smith from the University of Otago's Department of Economics coming on to talk about housing prices. Let's get through the songs.
This is the R1 News on Radio 1 91 FM. Te reo irirangi kotahi.
Kia ora koutou katoa. It is currently 11:13 here on the Aramere R1 News program. That was Get Out by Faith No More. We're now doing business as usual, aren't we, Maria?
Yes, that's what we tend to do. We're joined by Trent Smith from the University of Otago's Department of Economics for Business as Usual on R1 News. And today we're going to be talking housing prices in Aotearoa. Kia ora, Trent. How's it going?
Kia ora, Maria. Fine, thanks. Kia ora, Zach.
Kia ora.
So we wanted to start with kind of a general question about how the housing crisis is measured. Like, what is the housing price index, and is it an accurate measure of the state of the housing economy?
There are different measures you get that get reported about housing prices. A common one here is the median house price, mm-hmm. right, which is just the middle. So in a given location, it's the they look at all the house sales in the past year, and they split them into they line them up, and the one in the middle price-wise is the median price. But you also hear, so the price indexes are often averages. So, and they're often based on estimates. So they observe all these new sales, and then that new price information allows them to update their the information they have about what houses that weren't sold are probably worth now. Mm-hmm. And so that's the average price is maybe a little more informative than median, but.
The average house price has fallen below $1 million in Aotearoa, as you know, Staff New Zealand Herald and the spinoff have all reported yesterday. Can we infer that properties across the country have fallen, or is it because we're working off an average that at least some regions have seen house prices decrease, and this is, you know, kind of getting swept in with the national house price average?
I think you probably can. So yeah, there's always differences by region, of course, right? And that's true in this case too, but. It's definitely true that on average, yeah, house prices have fallen. In the past year, is the measure that's setting off news flashes, because there have been month to month drops, but a year to year drop, it's been quite a while since we've seen that, and it's happened in Dunedin. And honestly, most of these, I believe, most of these reported numbers are not adjusted for inflation. So if you account for the fact that we also have an inflation happening at the same time, then it's even in a more extreme drop.
Okay, yeah. And so is this drop a bit of an anomaly, or like will house prices begin to rise again in the future, or are we seeing more of a general downturn?
So you have to ask what caused house prices to go down. And of course, there's always a million reasons, right? There's both supply side and demand side reasons why housing prices might change. Honestly, the first thing I always look at, and this doesn't get reported enough, but the first thing I always look at is the interest rate. Like, if the OCR has recently changed, if mortgage rates have recently changed, those changes in the mortgage rates have a dramatic effect on house prices, right? Mm-hmm. So at the moment, the OCR has gone up quite a bit, right? So it's the highest it's been since 2016, I think, now. So OCR is the official cash rate. It's the rate that at which the Reserve Bank lends to banks, right? Mm-hmm. And so then that when it goes up, that cost gets passed on to banks, and who pass it on as higher mortgage rates. But when mortgage rates go up, it makes it more expensive to borrow money, right? And nearly everyone who either buys their own house or invests in the housing market, as an investor, nearly everyone borrows money to do it. Right, so the fact that the cost of borrowing goes up, that's going to mean that it's going to be a sort of a massive shock on the demand side for housing. Right, so more people will be unable to. So there are actually two effects here. So more people will be unable to afford the interest payments on the mortgage in the future. Mm-hmm. What banks do is they typically, when they're deciding whether or not to issue a borrower a loan, they'll typically they have both an income test and an equity test. And the equity test is a down payment if you're a new home buyer, right? So the income test, they're going to compare that against your mortgage payments, which are affected in a big way by the interest rate. But the equity test is for a new home buyer is the down payment. So the fact that prices house prices have fallen is actually makes it easier for some people to buy houses, right? If you were just on the threshold of having enough down payment, right, the 20% of the value or whatever, mm-hmm. to to be able to buy a house. Now it's actually easier for those people. But the larger effect, I think, is the other one, right? The fact that borrowing costs in the long run are higher, and so the net effect is you see this drop in demand.
Right. So how did housing crisis actually come about? Like, why is it that houses and rents got so high? Is it because of the OCR and general inflation, or did it start somewhere else?
OCR is a very good candidate explanation, right? Mm-hmm. So we've got the pandemic, which really throws in a bunch of demand side strange things, right, that we don't allow to have a lot of history and data on. But the last few years, the OCR has been historically low, right? It's been close to zero, I think 0.25. Now I think it's up to 2.5 now, but it was down to 0.25 for a while. So absolutely, in a simple financial model, where you're just imagining only paying interest and you hold rents constant, which rents can't go too high because they're based on people's income, then in that simple model, a doubling of the mortgage rate would cause the house value to go in half, right? And so the fact that we've gone down orders of magnitude in the OCR, mm-hmm. Of course prices are going to skyrocket, right?
Yeah.
It goes the other direction.
It's a bit of a knock-on effect. When it comes to rents, I guess rents are also incredibly high at the moment, especially in places like Wellington, you know, high urban density centres in Aotearoa. Do you know what impact rent control would have on the housing economy in general?
Well, rent control is interesting. So economists like to beat up on things like this, right? The fact that the government's going to step in and set a price. But rent control can be done locally in ways that is probably not that damaging. And there are good examples of this around the world of cities making rules around rent control, where it's not that you're setting a maximum rent that can be charged. It's just that you're saying landlords can't raise the rent.
Mm.
Yeah. And we do have some restrictions around that in New Zealand, but they're pretty loose. So
yeah.
So I think the rule is 10% per year or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, if you change tenants, as happens very frequently here in the student sector in Dunedin, if you change tenants, that 10% rule goes away, right? There's no reason you couldn't set a new rent that's 50% above what you charged last year's students.
Right, yeah.
Mm, yeah. Thank you so much for coming on, Trent.
Yeah, thank you.
My pleasure.
Take care. Alrighty. That was Trent Smith from the University of Otago's Department of Economics talking about housing prices and everything else going on with the housing economy, rising housing prices, the house pricing index, the whole shebang. What do we have up next, Amiria?
Up next, we've got Dr. Daniel Kingston, senior lecturer from the Department of Geography here at Otago University, to talk about the El Niño Southern Oscillation Index and what that is doing to the climate in Aotearoa. But first, should we play a little tune?
I'm keen.
This is Summer on the Inside by Warner Cass and Jean Tonique.
Let's get it going.
Yeah, man, it's just one of those days. I mean, everything's going wrong, but it's up to me to turn that around, just like it is up to anyone. So if we just think about the good, ignore the bad, we could turn this around. Plus, no matter what, I got summer on the inside. Summer on the inside. Yeah, man, it's just one of those days. I mean, everything's going wrong, but it's up to me to turn that around. Just like it is up to anyone. So if we just think about the good, ignore the bad, we could turn this around. Plus, no matter what. I got summer on the inside.
Kia ora koutou katoi, listening to the Rāmere R1 News Show here on Radio 1, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. It is currently 11:24, just before we had Trent Smith from the University of Otago's Department of Economics come through to talk about housing prices and the housing economy in Aotearoa.
Now we are joined by Dr. Daniel Kingston, Senior Lecturer from the Department of Geography here at Otago, because experts have predicted a warmer winter, or had predicted a warmer winter than usual, and are anticipating drier conditions in the south this summer on account of El Niño Southern Oscillation. It is predicted that for the third summer in a row, the El Niño Southern Oscillation Index will be in the cooling phase called La Niña, so we're going to hear about what this means. And how it has and will impact the climate in Aotearoa. Kia ora, how's it going?
Kia ora, hi.
So could you start by telling us a little bit about what the El Niño Southern Oscillation Index is?
Yeah, sure. So it essentially describes warm water sloshing from one side of the Pacific Ocean to the other and back again, and a change in wind direction in the atmosphere at the same time. Mm-hmm. So in the El Niño stage, then we have warmer water in the eastern Pacific by Central and South America, and cooler water on this side of the Pacific. And then in the La Niña situation, we have much warmer than average water on our side of the Pacific and much colder than normal on the other side. And so that does all sorts of things to the weather that we experience.
Mm-hmm.
So during a La Niña summer, on average, we would expect more northeasterly winds than normal. And that means that the kind of the east and the north of the country is a bit wetter than normal. And down in the south and on the west, it stays a bit drier.
Mm-hmm. So how much of a change actually needs to happen in the ocean for these extremes of El Niño and La Niña?
It's quite substantial, really. This kind of these large, well, it's more than a pocket, large areas of warmer or colder water move from east to west across either side of the Pacific. So we're talking more than a degree or two Celsius, you know, depending on how severe the event is.
Mm-hmm. Do we know all of the implications of what it means to be in La Niña?
We know the general picture. Every La Niña event is a bit different. So it's not kind of, yep, you're definitely going to get this, or no, you're definitely not going to get that. But we've got an idea that generally in New Zealand, the kind of the south and the west will be dry, the north and the east will be wet. It'll be a bit warmer than average as well.
Right. And how does that actually work? Because here in Aotearoa, we're so far away from the Pacific Ocean. We're on the complete other side of the country. How does it affect us down here?
I suppose, if you think about kind of the climate system, you know, across the Pacific or even like the southern hemisphere of the world, everything's connected to some extent. So if it's more rainy in one area or if it's colder in other areas, that affects how the winds blow, the temperature of those winds. So from these changes in the Pacific Ocean, you get impacts on the number of hurricanes you get in the Atlantic, droughts across the southern United States, the climate in parts of Africa, Indian Ocean as well. It really is a kind of global effects from these changes in the Pacific.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And has something changed that's resulted in the La Niña summers we've been experiencing and predicting in the future? Is this like a result of climate change that's going to be making things better or worse?
That's really difficult to say, actually. It's an area of the climate system that climate scientists are kind of still... We understand the system, right? We understand what it does and broadly how it works. But trying to look at how climate change kind of sits on top of that and the effects it has, we've still got lots of contrasting signals. So it's difficult to be definite. There is some evidence to suggest that these sort of La Nina events are going to become more common or more intense, at least, as the planet warms up. But it's difficult to say for sure. It's difficult to say that, like, the situation over these last few years where we've had this recurring La Nina situation is anything more than just kind of a random blip in the mm-hmm. climate system.
Is there any understanding of what this would mean for New Zealand weather in the long run and Aotearoa's climate?
Well, it's getting warmer anyway because mm-hmm. of climate change. And what La Nina does, it warms the sea surface temperatures around us, so it leads to marine heat waves and problems, you know, in the ocean associated with conditions that are warmer than the marine life is used to. If the seas are warmer around us, then that means that we can get stormier conditions. Our heavy rainfall events might get heavier. Bad news for snow and ice in the Southern Alps. Mm-hmm. And also, it changes that distribution of the water across the country, right? If the west coast, which is usually wet, gets drier, then that will have a big impact on those systems. We had a La Nina event this summer just gone, and locations from Milford Sound right up to Westport had their driest summer on record or close to their driest summer on record. And that was in part linked to what was going on with the La Nina situation.
Wow, yeah. Thanks so much for coming on today and talking to us a little bit more about the El Nino Southern Oscillation and helping, get a bit of an understanding about what this actually means rather than just words being thrown around.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
That was Dr. Daniel Kingston talking about the El Nino weather system. Up next on the program, we have Dr. Kimberly O'Sullivan coming through to talk about disconnected households on prepaid power plans going unreported. It's currently 11:31 here on the Ramere R1 News. Up next, song-wise, we have I'm So Blessed Your Mind by none other than James Blake. Stay tuned. Puritia kia raka.
Is it alright the way it is? Lover, I've seen it all now I've seen this. Never saw you crying, but I saw the smoke. You never saw
is 11:35 a.m. and you're listening to R1 News here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi Radio on 91 FM. Just earlier on, we had Dr. Daniel Kingston from the Department of Geography here at Otago Uni talking about the El Niño Southern Oscillation Index, how it works and what it means for the New Zealand climate.
Are you familiar with prepaid power? Well, if you're not, it's quite simple to get your head around. You pay a certain amount for a certain amount of power, and if you exceed the amount, you need to top up. There are considerable pros and cons with prepaid power. It's very handy if you need to budget and know exactly how much you're using, but on the contrary, if you overshoot your budget, you'll get disconnected, and no one will know. A recent op-ed in Newsroom has found that prepaid power consumers are experiencing hidden disconnections. This means that families across Aotearoa could be needing assistance from either the government or social service providers, and no one would know that they needed help. Just how bad is this problem, and what can we do? What can be done about it? We're now joined by energy poverty specialist Dr. Kimberly O'Sullivan from Te Whare Wananga o Otago Ki Poneke, who authored the Newsroom op-ed. Kia ora, Kimberly.
Kia ora.
How's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. Now, a new Consumer NZ Energy survey found that 15% of respondents are struggling to pay for power have switched to prepaid power as a more affordable option. Would you say that there might be a link between income level and using prepaid electricity?
Yeah. So basically, once you have been issued a disconnection notice and you've had power on a standard post-payment plan disconnected, you might run into some problems around, you know, your credit history, your credit rating. And so if you're on a lower income and you can't kind of fix your credit rating, or if you have a poor credit history from the past, then when you apply to get a new electricity connection, it can be quite hard. So that's why we find that people on lower incomes are generally the customers that are on prepayment.
Now, power companies report disconnections for people on post-payment plans, but they don't do the same for those on prepaid power plans. Why do you think this is?
Yeah, so government collects the statistics on disconnection on a quarterly basis, and they only require electricity companies to report the statistics on post-payment plans because that's the most common. So there are a smaller number of people that are on prepayment. But it would be very possible for retailers to also report disconnections for prepayment consumers. And I think that's really important because, as we know, they're lower income people. And so we want to know if those people who are least able to afford electricity are also going without.
Do you think it's likely that power providers will voluntarily offer up data on their prepaid power users?
Yeah, and I do want to commend the industry for being willing to talk about this and to being open to being a bit more clear about disconnection statistics. So the kind of the largest retailers are willing to have that conversation. Like I said in the Newsroom piece, Mercury Energy has talked to consumer, they've talked to me about how we might report it, and they're aware that, you know, we should be looking at this as an issue.
Right, that was through their subsidiary Glowbug, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Now, you led a research survey in 2010 to investigate households using prepaid electricity. Did you find that there was a frequency or percentage of households that regularly went without electricity, or did it fluctuate more so?
Yeah, so we did. We had, about half, 52% had disconnected at least once in the past year, and then there was 17%, so about one in six, that had disconnected six or more times. So, you know, there was a kind of frequent flyer type thing happening with disconnections, and I'd argue that it's those people that are having frequent disconnections on prepayment that perhaps we're just ignoring, that we need to be giving them more support, and that's why I think it's important to start looking at some of those statistics around prepaid disconnection.
Mm. Now, can people who have been covertly disconnected on their prepaid plans access government or social assistance to help get them through?
I think it's always really important for anybody who's in the situation where they're unable to pay their electricity bill or they've been disconnected to get in touch with their electricity providers and with MSD to find out what they might be entitled to. There is some support available, but it depends on eligibility and things. So, yeah, I do think that it's very important that people do ask for help when they're in that situation.
Now, you noted in your newsroom article about, you know, this topic that it's important to distinguish the disconnection length when collating data for statistics on energy disconnections. What do you think is the appropriate measure of time before you register that a disconnection is worth reporting on with regards to prepaid power plans?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, it is a bit like the prepaid phone. Sometimes you just need, if you're in a position where you can top it up, sometimes you just need that awful reminder that the thing stopped working and you need to fix it. And then suddenly it's urgent and you do something about it. But you know, if we reported the total number of disconnections, it would also be important to decide on a length of time that we think it starts to become important for people to be reconnected within. So when I did my surveys back in 2010, a third of the people that had disconnected in the past year, they had gone without electricity for 12 hours or more the last time they disconnected. So, I mean, I absolutely think that after 12 hours, if you haven't reconnected, then we need to be finding out what's wrong. And if you've, you know, sometimes people might have gone away from the house, but I think in most cases it's somebody who's sitting there who just can't afford to top it up.
Now, do you think that those facing energy hardship and who are on prepaid plans are having a much more difficult time paying for power given the cost of living crisis, which is crunching down on Aotearoa's most vulnerable?
Yeah, I do think that that is what we're seeing from the Consumer NZ News survey. You know, they've seen basically about a doubling of people between 2019 and 2022 who have said that they have been disconnected due to non-payment of bills. So, you know, it's of concern to me. And so I would imagine that we're seeing the same kind of thing going on among those on prepayment, but we don't have the statistics, so we don't know.
Do you know if that the winter energy payment applies to those on prepaid plans?
The kind of payment plan that you're using for your electricity shouldn't affect your eligibility for the winter energy payment because they use different criteria. You know, so I think do check your eligibility for the winter energy payment.
All right. Well, kia ora, Kimberly. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you.
Take care. That was Kimberly O'Sullivan from Te Whare Wananga or Otago Ki Poneke, speaking about, you know, households going on prepaid power plans, getting disconnected, and that disconnection going unreported. It's currently 11:43 here on the Ramere R1 News program. Coming up later, we have a little segment called Off to Market. We'll be speaking with Michelle Driscoll from the Otago Farmers Market, correct, Amelia?
Yes, yep. And we're going to be hearing about all the fun things happening at the market and also going on in Otaputi this weekend.
Yes. You must go. You must go to them. But before we get to Michelle Driscoll, we've got Pickles from the Jar from Australian singer-songwriter Courtney Barnett. You're listening to the R1 News here on Radio 1. Te reo, e rangi kotahi. Take care.
Wait, sorry. Let's do that again. I say dance, you say dance. I say friends, you say France. You're from Adelaide, I'm from Hobart. I say Hugh, you say Grant. I say pot, you say plant. Smile. Christopher, I say walking. You love, I love Christopher walking.
We want to hear your thoughts. Text in to 0212 Radio 1.
Kia ora koutou katoa, you're listening to the Rāmere R1 News Show here on Radio 1. Te reo irirangi kotahi, that was She Note from Mike Patton. It's a very dynamic song, that, one could say.
And we're just coming up to 10 minutes to 12, which means it's time for Off to Market, our weekly segment here on the Rāmere R1 News Show. And today we are back with Market Manager of the Otago Farmers Market, Michelle Driscoll, to hear about what's going to be happening at the market tomorrow morning. Kia ora, Michelle.
Morena, hi. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
So,
nice to be back to chat to you.
Yes, yeah, it's been a while since we've had you on.
How many weeks has it been, I wonder? Feel like
a few, but you talked to a couple. You know, you talked to a few the last few weeks. So
yeah, we did.
I'll wrangle some growers for you the next time I have a chat with.
That sounds great.
Fantastic.
So, what's going to be buzzing at the market this week?
Well, this week we've got, so Down Dunedin obviously has been going on for the last week, and they've got another, they're on till the 21st of August. So as part of the farmers market celebration of that, we've got, we're doing a masterclass, and it's, you know, a cooking class for the difference, and it's going to have Vaughan Wesselson from Blue Mountain Butchery, and he's going to bone out a sheep. And so we'll see that all happening. And then we'll have our chef, Amy, and she's going to create lots of little dishes and tasters from that, using seasonal products and produce from market vendors. So she'll kind of go around the market, source what's great and tasty, and then come up with some marinades and dips and, you know, drizzles and all sorts, and do that on the barbecue. And so there'll be little tasters, and people can just drop by. It's a free event. And Down Dunedin, obviously, it's celebrating the food and drink that gives Dunedin its special flavour. We're obviously more all about the Otago region as well. So Blue Mountain Butchery, their butchery in Tapa Nui, and all their lamb is sourced locally from that area. So, yeah, that'll be a little bit different to normal.
Oh, sounds absolutely delicious. How's the weather?
Like
how's weather? The... Oh, what's right?
Weather, are you
going to say? Yes. How's the weather been treating you? Because it's been quite a, you know, a cold, kind of windy time recently.
It's been, there's some gnarly ones, isn't it? And I mean, a lot of the farms did, you know, some of them were just rice paddies from what I heard.
True.
And some of that will take weeks and weeks to really dry out.
True.
So, you know, there will be a little bit that would have got wasted. A lot of it they could still harvest, which is great. And a lot of it is fairly sort of resilient, but I know there was potatoes that weren't going to be able to be dug up because it was just too wet. So hopefully, you know, that they'll be dug up by now or in the next week or two. But yeah, that was certainly a lot of rain hitting the region, wasn't it?
Yeah. So has that affected? Do you know if that's going to affect any vendors for tomorrow?
No. I mean, Ettrick Gardens won't be there tomorrow, but they're not there. They're not coming, they're just having a weekend off, which is a rare thing for them. But it shouldn't affect everyone else. As far as there'll still be lots of fruit and veggies there. And most places should be, you know, because the weather's been better this last week, so hopefully things are drying out nicely in a good way.
Mm. Yeah, the season is starting to change. What are some things that are going to be coming up, some new produce over the next few weeks? At the market, is there anything popping back in?
I don't know if there's anything sort of different or new. Not for the next few weeks. Yeah, I mean, once we hit spring, I guess there'll be... And I can't remember off the top of my head now what will be coming through first. But it's still, still quite a few weeks away. So I can talk to that closer. We've got a few new products like Marie, she's got a vegan herb spread, and she's also got a new vegan herb cheese, so that's a bit new this last week or so. She's up on the platform, and Havoc Farm Pork and Brightside Microgreens, they are finalists in the Otago Hospitality Awards as the producer awards, so they've got some great products. So Brightside, they do my favourites, actually. I don't even know what it's called, but I always just take them out. A tub of your finest, and I always just take my container along, and it's really, really fine microgreens, really nice just to throw on poached eggs in any meal. It's really good.
Gives them a bit of colour and nutrients.
Yeah, can't think of... Oh, and what else? Yeah, with Chef Amy this weekend, she'll just be getting... she'll be trying some tartan sari pickles with some of the lamb. She'll be making salsa verdes, like Jane Field's coriander. She'll be making some little dips for that. So there'll be lots of little tasters that you can come by, and you can sit for as long as you like, or, you know, as short as you want. And that'll just be near, it's in the normal spot at Blue Mountain Butchery Stop, so just past the X as you walk in the gate. So when you walk in the gate and to the left, you'll see that all happening.
Awesome. Well, some of our listeners come on by. I won't be able to come on by, unfortunately. I'm going to be in Timaru tomorrow, but if I was, I would definitely come on through and do some Downing stuff. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Michelle.
We'll see you next time. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. Have a good weekend.
Likewise. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Michelle Driscoll, manager of the Otago Farmers Market, telling us about what's happening at the market tomorrow, including some free tasters from which butchery was it? The Blue Market. Market Butchery. Sounds really interesting.
Sounds absolutely delicious. It is currently 11:56 here on the Ramire R1 News Program. I reckon we'll just get through one more song and then we'll wrap up the show. How does that sound, Amiria?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Sounds dandy. Alrighty, here's the Beths with I'm Not Getting Excited. You're listening to Radio 1, Te Reo Erirangi Kotahi, Puri Tiaki e Raka. That was the Beths with I'm Not Getting Excited. You're listening to the Ramire R1 News Show here on Radio 1, Te Reo Erirangi Kotahi. It's currently 11:59 and we are in the process of wrapping things up. Are we not, Amiria?
Yeah, coming to the end of the news week here on Radio 1. It's been a big one.
Radio fun. All right, let's, what do we have? We had a cheeky little, you know, bulletin per usual from Eileen, shout out Eileen, and then we had Business as Usual with Trent Smith, talking about pricing houses and housing prices and the national fall of housing prices.
Yeah, and all the economics behind how that actually works, which is always interesting. Mm. Then we had Dr. Daniel Kingston coming in to talk about the El Nino Southern Oscillation Index, which is a way of measuring the temperature in the Pacific Ocean and how that affects the weather.
We also had a little interview with Dr. Kimberly O'Sullivan. She's an energy hardship specialist, about people on prepaid power plans getting disconnected and those disconnections going unreported. And then lastly, we just had Off to Market with Michelle Driscoll, did we not?
Yes, yep, hearing about what's happening tomorrow morning, including a free taster as part of the Dine Dunedin.
Treat yourself this semester
class.
And look
absolutely fantastic stuff, isn't it? That was this show today here on Radio 1, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Up now is the Friday Nooner, I believe. Have a good day, take care, and be sure to have a good weekend.
Keep it locked.
Keep it locked. Listen to our news weekdays 11 to 12.
All of our content lives online at r1.co.nz.